You're listening to Am I the Bullcast, the only Magic the Gathering podcast in the entire world. Just shout out to us and all the other non-existent Magic the Gathering podcasts out there. We are the only ones. I'm your host, Mike Carrozza. And of course, I'm kidding. There are many amazing Magic the Gathering podcasts out there. We just happen to be the only ones out here saying that we're the only ones. Shout out to us. We're back again. I forgot how to do intros. And speaking of intros, it's time for me to introduce my co-host, super producer, genius, Morgan Sanchez. Hi, Morgan.
What's happening, Mike? And like any good Midwesterner or Midwestern transplant, we'll just segue right into what the weather's like. And it's snowing today.
Okay? Oh, good for
you. It's 40 degrees and snowing. And guess what the temperature was yesterday? It was almost 75 degrees.
So we're having fun. Here's the thing. I need to convert 75 to Celsius.
Oh, I forget you live in a different 23.
That's beautiful.
Galaxy. The French one.
To us, it's 50 degrees Fahrenheit right now. And for the weekend, most of it's been like 14 degrees Celsius, so 57, so 50 to 60 degrees. And honestly, I can't go back. I'm watching the snow melt, ice melt into the grass, which means we're dog sitting this week. And if my friend does not have any boots for this dog, we're going to have to go get him boots because that's just no way. I'm not dealing with no fucking mud. I tell you that much. Sorry, Ken. Not doing it. No. I don't like mud. Also, shout out. This episode is going to be a little bit more low key, at least in terms of the before and after the interview stuff, because I'm exhausted. I'm super, super tired. My uncle is in the hospital right now. He's being made to be comfortable, quotes. You know what I mean? So he's not going to be with us very much longer. And that sucks. It's not great. And I'm dealing with that. So if you're like, Mike's a little weird this episode, shut up.
It's the state of the world on top of everything, guys. We'll be okay.
That doesn't help. Elon Musk is still alive. My uncle is dying. No justice.
They're all still alive. I want your uncle to be alive. Let me preface with that. I would like that very much. But everyone else,
I'd love
can
them healthy and alive. But
do
yeah,
their own thing,
I think
as it were.
There's plenty of other people out there that I'd be happier to trade place with my uncle. Let's just say. So that said, bit of a mood today as we record this episode of Am I the Bullcast. We do have a fantastic guest set up. He's calling in later. He's a good pal of ours, and I want to have him on sooner than later because we got into a chat about the bracket system, and we're about to do the same when he calls in to have it recorded this time. So I thought that would be apropos, and I know I'm tipping the hand a little bit here, but I just so you know what you're in for. I mean, not everybody reads the description or the name of the episode. We're talking brackets today on the call, and then we'll get to it on the other side. But before we get there, I have to address something else that is hard to wrap my head around, and that is the Legends of Bikini Bottom, the Lands Under the Sea, and internet sensation Secret Lair drops under. That's right, SpongeBob SquarePants. Hoo boy. Morgan, what do you think of these? What are your thoughts on this?
So, I'm a good millennial, and I grew up loving SpongeBob SquarePants. It was peak comedy for me. I still think it's funny. I'll admit, I still think it's one of the most hilarious kid shows ever made.
It's so funny.
There's a lot of nuance. There's a lot of stuff for like the parents in there, and like the kids shows don't really do that anymore. There isn't some of that like snarky sardonicness that you saw in Nickelodeon shows 20 years ago.
Okay.
What is the Secret Lair doing? This was announced in Vegas, MagicCon Vegas last year. And I think I mentioned in the last Bullcast that I was there at the preview panel with one of our news people, Nick Wolf, and we were covering it, and we knew what was coming, right? We knew that we get the embargo assets prior.
Right.
So we knew that this was going to be like a big thing, and we're just kind of waiting and waiting for them to show it in the panel. And the second they show the SpongeBob panel, they didn't show any cards at the top, but it was just the title card, right?
The Secret Lair. Right.
Everybody cheered. Everybody was excited. I mean, you saw the people who were in Abu, they were shocked. I mean, people were like, girl, what the hell is even that? But most people in that panel were cheering. They were like, oh, my God. It was actually, like, not what I expected. I expected a lot of people to be like, what?
I mean, here's the thing. Part of me was like, what is happening? But also another part of me was like, this is exactly what Secret Lair should be doing for sure.
Yes.
Like here's it. Now that we have them and we can go through them, it's part of me is like, I'm super conflicted, right? So like, first things first, let's talk about the lands under the sea. You get one basic land of each type with Gary somewhere in the art. And it's just, it's Bikini Bottom. And it looks so good. It's honestly my favorite one of the three. It's so sweet. I just hope you get multiple lands in when you buy this, like instead of just like one of each. I really like these. I think these are exactly what we should be doing. It gives you a sense of the environment. You've got like a cute character involved. These are the exact kind of lands that I'm like, this is how you personalize. I could picture an altarist, you know, doing this to somebody's lands and being commissioned to do this. And now Magic's doing it. And, you know, they did a great, great job with it. John Vermilia really nailed these lands. I think these are a slam dunk. They're super cool. They're SpongeBob, but they're also not far off from Magic. Like you could see these in other decks.
Like a silly deck, something goofy.
Exactly. And you know what? I live for these. These are great. We'll go on to the internet sensation one, wherein you've got Counterspell, Days, Inevitable Betrayal, Force of Despair, and Night's Whisper, and a food token. But they're all, screenshots. Or like, yeah, they're the memes that have become screenshots that have become memes from the show. So you've got like the derpy SpongeBob with his hand on his hip and like mocking whoever, the meme of like you alternate between lowercase and uppercase in the same word. That's Counterspell. Hilarious choice. Days is Mr. Krabs with the just kind of thrown for a loop. The blurriness of the dizziness of it all is very like Days is a great card for this, but like also so far that's 2 out of 2 that I don't play. Inevitable Betrayal with Patrick. I know this meme. I don't know what it's from really, like what episode of the context of it, but like it's basically the delayed bribery on a suspend card that again, another card I don't play. Force of Despair, Squidward looking out at Patrick and SpongeBob having fun. But it's Force of Despair, which is destroy all creatures that entered this turn, which is the pitch spell from MH2. Another card that doesn't see much play, though. I think of all the cards so far, should probably see a little bit more play. And then you've got Night's Whisper, which is the meme of Squidward with his eyes open, bloodshot at night.
It's the best one.
Head on pillow. And draw 2 cards, lose 2 life on Night's Whisper. Thematically, I don't get some of the choices they've made. I know that they wanted the memes. I'm with them on that. I think absolutely. But the only two that work for me are Counterspell and Days, like in terms of vibe matching the name. Night's Whisper is a close third, but like I just don't care. And also the Krabby Patty in the food token looks perfect. And I remember there being an IRL like terrible looking hamburger being like not rotoscoped in, but like, you know, they do a lot of like real life, like they have the hand and stuff that they just kind of put in.
It's so, like an old computer like FMV game.
Yeah.
Just juxtapose
so that. But ultimately, so to me, this Secret Lair is a bit of a miss. Value's not there and you're getting off on the meme Counterspell and that's the only thing. Truly the only thing. Night's Whisper is going to be something that people are going to love, but I cannot. And then down to the Legends of Bikini Bottom, which is characters with legendary. So the characters of Bikini Bottom of SpongeBob SquarePants. So you've got Plankton, Mr. Krabs, Squidward, Gary, Sandy, Patrick, and of course, SpongeBob. But they are reskinned versions of legends already in the game. So you've got a couple that, like, I mean, perfect. Barktooth Warbeard for Patrick, excellent pick. A vanilla legend from Legends that does nothing, and the flavor text is, I don't get it, centered at the bottom with Patrick, who's got a piece of wood nailed into his forehead. Exactly what I want this to be. Red black though, don't know if I agree. Just a crazy, like there were so many legends that were vanilla. You could have picked. I don't get it. You know, Gary the Snail as Toxril, the corrosive, very funny. But, you know, okay, fine. I get it. He's like the big slug or snail in the game. Sandy Cheeks as Toski, again, a squirrel that sees play, a legendary squirrel that sees play.
Perfection.
Here's where we get into problems for me. Grazalax as Squidward. Squidward is Grazalax. I'm sorry, but no. I just don't see it as Mono Blue. I get that you want to have like some sort of like tentacled thing be Squidward, but it's just, it doesn't fit to me. The flavor text is, I hate all of you. Excellent, but I just don't see it. Mr. Krabs is Charix, the Raging Isle, a 017.
A crab.
A crab. That's it. That's literally it, though. This is like, that's the thing, is they were focused on a creature type, but not as a character, because like Mr. Krab is not Mono Blue. Mr. Krabs is black. Mr. Krabs wants treasure tokens. He cares too much about money. This doesn't suit him.
Well, can we talk about Plankton being Mono White, though?
Yo, Plankton being Mono White is insane. Not to mention the fact that Skrelv is a beloved little dork, is a little weirdo, and like is basically this set's the, well, this set's All Will Be One's mother runes. You know, and it makes no, like, I get that you wanted to pick just a little guy, but it doesn't, I don't buy it. Like, the mechanically, this doesn't, Plankton is like a tinkerer. He builds his things. He's definitely black, like, in terms of the color pie.
If they were going to have him be white, have him be Esper with that.
Dog, he should be an artificer. This is like a Shroom the Hegemon kind of thing, but yeah. He's too small. So it's like, I don't see, here's the thing. And then, of course, SpongeBob is Jota the Unifier, which I get that they wanted to have a rainbow, so it's all colors, and that they wanted it to be Jota the Unifier, if not the Unifier. That just feels a little lazy. You're just giving, like, the trolls who love a Jota deck another thing. And, like, look, as someone who loves the concept of a Jota deck, putting one together and being hated off the table does not seem like a great idea to me, so I'm less interested. But this is the first time, and I can't believe I'm saying this. I cannot believe I'm saying this, Morgan. I'm so mad that these words are coming out of my freaking mouth. I wish, and again, I'm so mad about this. I wish these creatures, these cards, were mechanically unique. Yeah. I wish that these secret layers had mechanically unique cards. And I cannot believe that I've come so far around the bend here. I cannot believe it. Mechanically unique cards would have made more sense to me here. What do you think of all of this?
It's really weird because I couldn't tell you what the reason is as to why they do this, because I'm pretty sure, what was it, like the very first secret lair of all time was the Walking Dead one, right?
Right, and that was mechanically unique, and that had blowback. Yeah.
Yeah, and there was also the idea that, okay, if they're mechanically unique, we can, back then, only print them in these secret layers. So once they're gone, they're gone. These cards are going to be $1 billion because they're never going to be reprinted again due to licensing issues and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. And now that we know that that's maybe not the case, like maybe these cards could show up in another set, in a reprint, special guest, whatever it may be, there's just not a reason to make them thematically unique. I'm really not sure what the reasoning is, but some of these seem really weird to me.
I just don't get it.
I think Plankton just as white, we're looking at color identity in general, of Patrick being black, red, I could get in terms of the chaotic nature.
Red for sure. But red's for sure, but black, I don't see him as weird. An ambitious type at all. Like Patrick does not strike me as ambitious whatsoever. He lives under a rock, for God's sake. He wouldn't do anything if he wasn't pushed to do something. Patrick is like, God, black, white, black, green, maybe, like, but then again, like, I don't know. Anyway, I think that these should have been mechanically unique. Not for nothing, Sandy Cheeks has way too much anger and like emotional, like she just will flip that we don't include red. That feels preposterous to me. Not to mention, she's a squirrel that's found a way to live underwater and engineered all this stuff. So where's the blue in that? I'm sorry, but this just doesn't. This just doesn't cut it for me. This secret layer is an entire miss, period. I just don't care for it. The basic lands being my favorite of the three, that to me is just a real bummer. And here's the thing. I wasn't particularly excited about the SpongeBob secret layer. I wasn't like, hey, let me get stoked on this, right? But I do think that the opportunity presented here means that, like, oh, there was a world in which this could have been done in a way that interested me. And it just does not.
Yeah.
Bummer.
No, I'm right there with you with it. It's like, for some of these, you can see, like, oh, I can kind of see it. I mean, Sandy Cheeks, right? She is Toski. She's got to attack every turn of Fable. She's indestructible. Those are fun things that you can tie to her character.
So, okay, but you know what? Toski having to attack every turn is a big one, actually.
You're
so
like,
that one, I'll give her that. Yeah, yeah. But that said, I will say, give it a couple months after the release, and I'll be on Cardsphere looking for that Night's Whisper, I think. That's what's up. I mentioned Cardsphere. Uh-oh, time to talk about our sponsor again, Cardsphere.com. We've got a referral link in the description of the show notes or in the YouTube video description. Please check it out. Use Cardsphere.com. Cardsphere, get your cards here. You use your cards to trade. Easy as that. I've got a whole pile happening right here, and I don't know what to do with them because they are below an amount that I want to sell for. But I'm just going to pop them on Cardsphere and make sure that there's a minimum. And if the people want them, they get them. And that's as easy as it gets, you know? Morgan, how is your Cardsphere adventure going with the Odyssey block foiling?
So it's funny because outside of that, I actually just got like a 20 card package from one of our EDH rec writers, Nick Lucchesi.
Tell
me more.
I ended
up finding his stuff. I forget what I was looking for. But I mean, it doesn't matter because I'll be looking for one thing and end up getting 30 more things. So he had some stuff in the marketplace that I just ended up adding to cart. And so he comes back and I mean, we realize it's one another, right?
It's us,
like, it's Nick, it's Morgan. Yeah. And he goes, out of these 20 cards, I got these two that were like showcase foils and they're not foil. And I said, Nick, you're fired. Like, how dare you? In what world could you imagine my disappointment, my sadness, my tears? Adding all those showcase foils to my cart and then two of them like just don't exist.
Damn.
My
Nick,
gosh.
Do
but see,
better.
And really, really, Nick. I mean, I'm sorry, but it's just like the last straw. And I mean, see, the good thing is, though, is this it's a good opportunity to tell people that if you do make an inventory mistake, you can just cancel the cards. I mean, nothing happens. It's not you have to cancel the whole package kind of thing. Like, you can just be like, oh, I thought that was a foil and it's not. Or maybe that got flushed down the toilet accidentally. My dog ate it, whatever.
It's
especially with a big order
adjust.
Like that. Yeah.
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 Like, you can pop one out and pop one in. Like, you just change what kind of it is in the inventory and come to an agreement. Like, I had one of those where I ordered a foil card and the foil was more expensive than the non-foil, but I still wanted the card. Like, it didn't matter to me, foil or non-foil. I just think the foil is real pretty and maybe one day I'll get it. But the guy I was buying from was like, oh, okay, let me just switch it out and then we're good. And it ended up being perfectly easy peasy. No delays for me there. It's just easy to use. I think what I have to wrap my head around is just how many cards I have that I'm looking to part ways with. I've got this little box here. You know how like you get a bundle and sometimes it'll have like another little box to put your cards in, and there's a bunch of stuff in this that I'm like, I didn't realize this was pricey. And this just sitting around. So let me pop those online, see if anybody will take them. That's what I'm up to. That's where I'm at with it. Easy peasy. Send them out. Get them off my desk. I think I'm going to turn on the phone and get our guest on the line. What do you
turn
think
the
of that,
phone
Morgan?
Down.
Do you think?
Turn it down.
Okay. I
light
think
it up.
So too. Let's do it. There it is.
Hey.
It's on. We can hear it.
Yep.
We can hear it. So it's time
to
check in with who's on the line. On Am I the Bullcast. We'll be back on the other end. Thank you. Looks like we got another caller on the line. Who am I talking to today?
Hey, Mikey Carosa. Mikey Carbonza Beans.
Hey, I know this voice.
It's your boy, Matt Morgan. What's going on, buddy?
Hey, Matty Morgan. I am doing fantastic now that you're chatting with me, buddy. It's good to hear from you. How you doing?
It's good to hear from you. Well, I was doing great, but then you called me Maddie, and that's what my grandma used to call me when I was like 8 years old. But other than that,
I got
great.
That habit.
No, you're good.
I'm sorry, I got that bad habit. I do the nickety names.
You're good.
You know how I do it.
No, I mean, like, you will never not be Mikey to me, so I figure it's reciprocal. It's reciprocal. Back and forth.
I've never been Mikey, but I call myself Mikey. It's always like, I know that like my niece and nephew are going to have to call me Mikey. Uncle Mikey, because they have an Uncle Michael. And I never liked Michael, so he can have that. But then Uncle Mike sounds awful.
It sounds like you're 60 Uncle years Mike old, doesn't sound or like good. You're creepy a little
yeah,
bit.
Yeah, I don't care for it. Yeah, I don't like that. So Uncle Mikey's pretty fun, right?
Mike, well,
like, I'll take that.
If anybody gives himself a nickname, like, oh, it's Mikey Carrozza, like, that's just, yeah. For me, it's permission to go with that. So, but yeah, either, yeah, just totally. Don't go by Mike. I like Uncle Mike, especially. You know, you're not
Mike
creepy enough
bad.
To...
Mike. Well, no. I'm not about to pinch too many cheeks. Excuse me. I had that done to me when I was a kid, and I didn't care for it at all. Some adults don't know how hard they're pinching. You know, these cheeks right here, they are strong. They were forged of the fires of lots of aunts at weddings and cousins I've never met pinching.
Bro, I still up. Haven't grown into my cheeks that I was born with. I get it. Rosy as hell. And the worst thing is when I smile too hard, like I get real squinty just because my cheeks are so big.
Oh.
The worst.
My eyes are never present.
The
That's
worst.
It. My eyes, if I have to force it, my eyes are open at max. If we're talking magic terminology, this is max speed for me right now. This is the, and then I'm relaxed and they're barely there. Well, wild.
We had a good run, but now we just don't see what we're doing.
I don't know, man.
I'm glad that we're starting this off on a real hot foot.
We're starting real hot with a video reference. We're going to. With the nicknames and then the video elements, the relevance of the video for the eyes. Look, you can find pictures. I'm smiling all over the place. My eyes are barely existent. They're barely there.
I mean, there's pictures good, of us though. Together even.
Yes, there are. Yeah, especially after Chicago, buddy. We had a good time out in MagicCon Chicago. February, wild time to be there, but
February in Chicago, awesome. It's the most wonderful time of year if you're a snowman. It actually wasn't too bad. I get warmed up a little bit, but whoever plans these MagicCon schedules needs to be reevaluated for their job performance. Because Chicago in February, on the lake, all that. Or we can go to Vegas in June in the desert and just hot
what
as all
swamp
get out.
Time?
or go to the swamp in Atlanta. Oh my gosh.
Swamp season in Atlanta where we're make sure you're wearing shorts for most of these cons. I don't know what to expect. I don't know if we'll see if the time will tell if I'll make it to any of the other cons, but I had such a blast in Chicago. I mean, we've already talked about it a couple episodes in a row, but when something that cool happens, it's tough to kind of be like, let's not talk about it again. First of all, we could talk about the live EDH rec show, how that went, the challenge the hosts, I guess.
It wasn't quite challenge the stats, yeah, but I mean it was a good time. You are right. It was fun. Getting to work with you in a formal capacity again.
Right.
So much fun. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It was a blast. You got to MC for us and dude, that was like everybody talks about how like you have benchmarks in your content creation career. That 100% is my new one. Just like the high from getting to do that with you and then a bunch of our buddies were in the audience. My fiance actually was there. She my fiance doesn't even play magic, but she was in the audience.
She
like,
came.
And she's like, she had no idea what we were talking about, but she still had fun. And that's how I know like we were doing a good job.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's hard not to know whether or not to root for somebody when the audience is so vocal. Like that was my favorite part of the whole thing is like, not only were the seats like full, but we had the lineup of contestants along the wall.
Yeah.
And watching people puzzle over the questions because there was some trivia elements. Like the game is like a trivia based on the stats of edhrec.com. And so you watch people mull it over, and then when an upset hits where like people are so sure it's B but turns out the answer is C,
dude, the reaction from the audience was so like it was wild because it just being up there in front of everybody and then you would reveal some answer and I could hear the audience go, what? Oh, like,
yeah,
people getting super, super into it. I loved it. It was super fun. The energy of the room was just fantastic.
I'm going to
be riding
so
this high
fun.
For a long time, for sure.
Exactly. And that's why we keep talking about it, is that it was a high that I'm still riding. Like, being back at McCormick Place and knowing that, okay, it's going to be a little bit different this year. I'm here on a more official capacity, but I am kind of like, you know, aware of where I'm at in the rungs of the ladder, let's say. You know what I mean? I'm not showing up like I'm JLK on game nights, right? I'm showing up as like, hey, I'm a featured content creator. I'm showing up. I'm doing a meet and greet that I'm not sure anybody's going to come to. But then I know that at the end of the weekend, I have this one thing that is I for sure no, it's going to be a blast. And then when you, when you, Joey and Dana asked me to do that, I was like, you guys could do it on your own. I don't know why you need me for this, but let's do it. And then turns out the game requires you guys to not know some information. So I was very happy to get involved.
I mean, the format came together really well. You just very easily. I you know me, you saw me like the day of, I was nervous as hell. I had forgot some things in the hotel room. I had to run back there. And just, I was very in my head leading up to it. And I just could not believe how well it went. And just the audience was got into it. We had a couple people just shoot us an email. I was like, hey, I heard this was great because a friend of mine got to go. I didn't, but now I'm really excited for Vegas. And so that's just, oh man, it was so reassuring. And yeah, I could talk about this all day long, but I want to shift it back to you because, man, this was your first event. This was your first MagicCon being there as a featured creator. And I don't know what you were expecting, but man, you had people at your meet and greet at least five deep for the entire time.
That was the big shocker to me is that, like, you know, you watch like my meet and greet, like our meet and greet, because it was me and Morgan. Morgan got to pull away from her duties to come to the meet and greet and be part of that too. So we're there just like, okay, Scrybabies are setting up. We know that their line is already capped. Like, we know that there are people lining up for them, and we need to make sure that they're not getting into Artist Alley. Like, you know, we need to make sure that it's contained. And I'm looking like, well, I don't know who's going to come over. But we just, like, it kept going. I didn't realize an hour and a half had gone by because I was like, well, you know, after the next couple, maybe I'll be able to take a seat and, like, have a chat with Morgan about, like, how her weekend's been going. No, it was nonstop and so surprising. I learned a lot from that weekend.
I love that for you.
Dude, thank you.
Everything was so successful, and it was fun getting to watch you just entertain and just be yourself in front of the listeners and the fans coming through. And you are super right, because we unfortunately do the same thing to folks next to us when we had our meet and greet. The line was already wrapping around Creator Central before the meet and greet formally started. Like, we started getting through people as soon as we got into our seats. That first thing in the morning, you know, the doors open at 10. You have to be there.
Not
10,
everyone's 10. There.
Not everybody's there. It's hard to get in. Those lines don't filter in. Those first few meet and greet sessions or those time slots, man, they're rough, but you absolutely crushed it. It was so much fun just getting to see everybody, like the Space Cow universe, which is
awesome.
EDH Rec, Architect, all of our sites. Man, it was a good weekend to be in there.
I'll tell you what was like, it was fun it was fun to have a meet and greet at all. That was pretty cool. Just to like be like, okay, well, let's see how this goes. To have people come at a steady pace and steady stream, that was also cool. I think it was really nice to have people on the team stop by and be like, hey, you know, we've worked together and we haven't had a chance to meet each other yet. So this is it. And I'm like, well, I was hoping to maybe you didn't have to meet and greet this line, buddy. Let's get in this. Let's have a hug. But then you got people that are legit waiting and they're like, I read the articles every week. We had a couple people tell me and Morgan that they have a reminder. One guy was like, I have a reminder on my phone when it's like, am I the bolus day? And like, that's crazy because I don't even have that. Like, I was just so blown away by the amount of love I was shown that weekend. And it was so cool. And yeah, the real cherry on top was, you know, getting to hang out with you guys and doing the live show. Because it was all the same day. We had the meet and
greet. Sunday was busy as hell,
It was so busy. It was really cool to be able to like squeeze a game in there. Because I was like, I just need to be nearby and around one of the EDH Reccast guys for sure, just to like be sure that I'm wrangled, right? Like, I don't want to be like, I don't want to miss out on anything. So when Joey was like, we need a fourth for this game, I was like, whatever it is, I'll be there. Matt, give me your bag. We're going to make sure. I see Dane out the corner of my eye. I know where he is. So I'm kind of like, okay, I'm in the right spot. And that game went fine and easy. And then Joey and I peeled off when you showed up to grab your bag and it was time to get in there. But it was nice to just like, this is like, I don't want to be like, this is the job, but this is what the job could be. You know what I mean? This is
100%.
This is work can be awesome.
Work can be super fun. And when you come from the overly corporate place, like my old job, I was a project manager software company, but like a like suit and tie software company, man, it's such a shift getting to play Magic. And this is what I get paid to do. It's so wild, but also, so you said you got to meet a bunch of people that work in the building over at EDH Rec. isn't it such a relief when you meet friends from the internet and you're like, oh, okay, good. You're not a pervert. Thank God.
Yeah. Yeah. Pervert, or you're not the world's worst conversationalist. You know, it's like, it's nice to, like, the first time I met Nick Wolf, I was like, we'd already played a couple games on Spell Table. Mm-hmm. I'd never seen him before, but he showed up. I'm like, this tall, handsome man is like looking over me while I'm drafting Angelo's cube. And he's like, I don't want to interrupt, but I just want to let you know it's me. It's Nick. And I'm like, oh, no way. Why don't you grab a seat? This is the best part of the day now. You know, Nick, Lucchese is also a lot of fun. I played a couple games with Roman, one of our newer writers for mm-hmm. Commander's Herald. And just like joking around with people and getting to know them. It's also nice to put a face to the avatar in the Discord.
Everybody's avatars are so different. Like I feel obligated to keep mine at least like some sort of, it looks like me.
Oh, totally,
man. It's so hard. Cause like when you meet people who like you talk to regularly and you've never seen their face and they have some weird avatar, you're like, oh
yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. That's how I felt with Lucchese, because he has the turtle from the Ponder, the special edition Ponder as his icon. And last year when we met, he was like, It's me, I'm the turtle. And I was like, oh, that makes a lot more sense when you put it that way. Speaking of which, he played a game with Jesper Ising at LobbyCon, and Jesper called him an asshole, sorry Ken, because he destroyed like one of his elves. And I don't think I've seen Nick smile that big ever in my life.
I mean, that's bold to come out. I mean, granted, like, I get it. You blow up a mana dork. There's got to be retribution for that. But I've never called a stranger any sort of name for doing that. It's always been my friends. It's the people that are closest to you that get the worst treatment, especially when it comes to magic.
Well, that's why I clown on my buddy Chris so much. But I think Jesper was kind of like nudging him with the elbow, being like, ah, you ass.
Yeah.
You know, not like a... And I think it really made his night, because it was like he was waiting for us to finish our game to jump in and swap seats with somebody. And then Jesper was like, we need a fourth. It's me, Rachel, and my buddy. And it's like, oh, okay, I'll go play with them then. See you later.
Nice. Nice.
And, you know, it was awesome. If you have any designs on going to a Magic Con, listeners, please, if you can swing it, don't be irresponsible with your money and your time.
No, like, don't do that. Don't do that. Do
it. Don't. But if it's something that you can make work, it is so worth it. It's so much fun to, like, it's impossible to be part of this community without some sort of, like, online pals. And there's a chance you'll bump into them. You'll be able to see all the people that you know and love from the creator space. It's really such a cool time. Like, it...
MagicCons are, like, the gatherings is just so great. It's so huge, and I don't think you can...
It's everything.
You can't oversell it.
No, it was so cool and so sweet to, like, we need one more person. All right, person we've never met before, jump on in. We have this new bracket system to test out. Let's talk about that. Awesome. Where are you from? What's your deal? Hell yeah. This is my buddy Casey. This is Dan. Jordan, you're cool. You know, it's like now we're playing this game together. I can't get over just how seamless it was to be in that kind of environment where people, like, you're with like-minded people, in the sense that, like, you want to be part of this environment, you want to be part of playing this game, you love the same thing, you have a base language to work around. I can't get enough, and I hope I get to go to more, and I hope to see more people at those. Shout out everybody that came out to Chicago for the meet and greet, to the EDH Recast live show. Thank you so much.
Yeah, it was,
it's it means a lot.
It was huge, and just I was blown away, because I mean, just how the gathering part of Magic the Gathering still is like the best part. And then seeing people gather, like, you don't get to see so many people. And for you, like, I haven't written articles in forever, but like, you still are plugging at it. And seeing those people that, like, oh, I can't really actively count how many views this got, but you can count the people that come up and shake your hand, and, like, get a picture with you. And it was so cool to watch you just get to do your thing, man. MagicCon Chicago was just... I always think and leave these events, and to myself, I'm saying, there's no way this can get better. There absolutely is no way that these events can get better. And then they do. And it's so much fun, and just keep going. I'm excited for Vegas. I'm really excited for Atlanta. I've only been to Atlanta once, and it's for like an afternoon for work.
Yeah.
And I'm excited just to like go mess around. Like, the One More Mana dudes are down there. Get to go see Atlanta brunch. Never done that before, dude, but I'm excited to.
I've got my fingers crossed, and I'm knocking on a bunch of wood for Atlanta. I've got buddies out there that I'm hoping are going to be around at the same time. And Atlanta's a very good stand-up city with an incredible stand-up scene. So
yeah,
getting to merge that just the same way I did in Chicago is you know, it's the pinnacle. It's like everything I want, you know?
Well, and compare that to Vegas, for me to, which is just a bounce house of a city.
Well, see, that's the thing. For me, Vegas never liked the city. So to me, it's kind of like way more relaxed. I'm not looking to do spots in Vegas. I'm not going to do comedy out there. I'm just going to do the con. I'm going to get my 30,000 steps in at the con.
Hell yeah.
And I'm going to get way more games in.
So,
and that's the plan for me if I can make it to Vegas.
So Vegas for me this year is going to be a little different. So I convinced a couple of my buddies from home to come and we're going to go to Vegas.
Oh.
But I'm convincing them. It's like, oh, we're just going to, we'll call it my bachelor party, but everybody should come. And so we're going to mess around. And so a buddy from that works on Architect, it's his... he's also getting married later this year too. So we're like, all right,
nice.
Joint bachelor party. We're just going to like be super nerdy and like responsible with our time. And like, okay, we'll go to the buffet at Caesars. And that's the crazy thing we do, but it's super fun. I'm really, really excited for Vegas just to, man, get to just go do things. And I'm not a Vegas person either, but I was lucky enough to go.
Man.
I went and got to play craps with Brian Kibler, Josh Lee Kwai, and Jacob Bertrand.
Nice.
And that is a formative memory for me now.
That's fun.
And so getting everybody was chanting, like if we needed a six roll playing craps, everybody's chanting for 3-3. So we had the entire Golden Nugget chanting, Hill Giant, Hill Giant. And no one knows what a Hill Giant is. Or if we needed a 10, we needed what's a creature that's a 6-4? Craw worm. Oh my gosh.
Oh, yeah.
It was the wildest thing. And so that was just one of the wildest and most surreal nights of my life. And I would not take it back at all. Like I was exhausted because we stayed out till 4 a.m.
Yeah.
Totally do it
and
again.
That's where
I totally
you gotta do that. That's where you stay up until the wee hours of the morning. See, that's the kind of thing I could get into. For me, it's like, I'm not a drinker. I don't like going to a club. Casinos are not necessarily a thing that I like to be around for too long, but you got food in Vegas.
You got so much good food.
And that's where I'm kind of like, oof, I better start saving now because I want to get slapped by Gordon Ramsay. You know what I mean? I want let me get in there.
Yeah,
the food is great for the first time.
I've never been a Vegas person until I was there with Vegas people, and I was like, oh, I get it. Like, I'm not even spending, like, I think I spent like $60 gambling. It was whatever.
Okay.
But
sick.
Super, super fun. Man, if anybody is on the fence on going to Vegas, just go. Just take the bullet.
Yeah.
Jump in there. It's so much fun.
Go to the Magic Con. The one time I went to Vegas was during a Magic Con for my best friend's bachelor party.
Uh-huh.
So we didn't go to the Magic Con. They wanted to go to clubs and drink all the time. But then they were too hungover one day. Like one of the weekends, and I got up early with my cousin who I was rooming with, and I was like, hey, turns out there's a Magic Con like 10 minutes away. Do you want to come with me? And he's like, yeah, okay. And so I went out there, and I didn't know anybody back then.
Fair.
So I bumped into the Commander's Brew guys because I was like, hey, I just moved to Toronto. Like, now we're friends, you know?
Little old Andy
and then
Hall.
We stayed for an hour at old Andy Hall in Chantabarras. So I, you know, we kicked around there. I got some product and stashed it in my suitcase, and I was like, this is the one thing that was for me this weekend, and that was also the weekend I found out I have sleep apnea because my cousin was like, you need a doctor.
we all learned this weekend. We all learned some about ourselves.
We all learned. Hey, you know what? Vegas was a very important weekend for me. I'll tell you that much.
I mean, good.
But Matt Morgan, you are not calling to just catch up and hang out with me on the phone because we do that whenever we want, but you're calling me on the Bolus line. Calling on the Bowlcast.
I have
what's got you calling the Bowlcast line?
You might say I have an agenda for talking to you today. So
hot damn.
We've toyed around with it a little bit, but we hinted that oh man, these bracket things, what are they?
Uh-huh.
So I got to play a little bit in Chicago, got to talk to a lot of people. And so for those of you who don't know, there's a new Commander bracket power level system. It's in place. Brackets 1 through 4 for the social, bracket 5 for CDH. And then you have these game changer lists. And Mikey, I want to talk to you about these game changers because.
Okay.
So am I the bolus for thinking that people are putting way too much weight and way too much value into the presence of a game changer in their deck or not? Because, man, everybody just won't shut up about them. They're powerful. They're great, big, powerful spells. But, man, they are not the end all be all that everybody's making them out to be.
I see you. I hear you. I'm with you. There is definitely some tier, like There should be some stratification to some of these.
Like, yeah, there definitely should
be. There's no doubt about it.
So,
like, if I play Sarah's Sanctum in my creature-only deck without any enchantments, is that really worth marking it as a game changer? Like, is that really where it belongs?
But
obviously someone's going to run it if they're running enchantments, but it's that kind of... You got to remember that. Like, obviously, you brought up Demonic Tutor last time we spoke about this. You know, Demonic Tutor... It's just another card in your deck, but if your deck sucks.
Yeah, so my big thing, God, how many people do you know, like, you go to an LGS and you're playing with a kid that's, like, just learning. I have a very specific, when I think just of
done, sure.
this, the, when I think of, like, the newer player, I have a kid that I played against one time. I just picture him, and he was playing a Kalia of the, it was the bad Kalia, I don't remember the name of it, but he was playing
Zenith Seeker?
Yeah, something like that. But he was playing like 28 lands because he just didn't know any better. He's like, I just want to play a lot of angels. And he had all these 6 and 7 drops. Never cast a spell. I felt really bad for him. Didn't know what he was doing. Brutal. And you can't tell me that if that kid went up and bought a pack and opened up like a Jeskha's Will, his deck is automatically a bracket 3 deck. You cannot tell me that one card, one game changer is going to make that big of a difference and move a deck from a bracket one pile of these are literally the only cards that I own into a bracket three, like attuned, upgraded deck.
Sure.
And this is obviously very, very much like a very exaggerated example, but I don't think it's
sure.
It's super easy to think it doesn't happen because we're online all the time. Man, I go to an LGS and I see it at least once a month.
I have similar experiences with my LGS where it's somebody who bought a pre-con and then bought like a bundle and then a bundle of something and then opened the chase from there. That's like, I got this Smothering Tide that's going in this deck that I just, you know, I'm upgrading the Blame Game pre-con that already has a Jeskha's Will, I think, and I'm putting the Smothering Tide in it and it comes with Trouble in Paris because it was printed in there.
Yeah.
That's 3 game changers, you know? But it's a pre-con that one card is changed in. I think that ultimately, like, because you did an episode, the EDH Rec cast did an episode about the brackets with Gavin, just discussing this. And Gavin repeated something over and over again, which I think is the crux of the bracket system in a big way, which is not to tell you that I'm trying to trick you, but if we can quote unquote trick you into having the conversation, that's the win.
Yes.
Right?
Yep.
And so to me, I agree entirely with that sentiment. However, by having a game changer list, you are giving a subset of people a thing to point at and be like, this is black and white. This list isn't up for discussion. Whereas I think that some of it is, you know?
Well, and it gives a data point for people to do some gamification with too. They can say, oh, well, by the letter of the law, my deck is a bracket two because I'm only playing one tutor. I'm not playing any game changers,
game changer.
But they build this highly synergistic pile of cards that just build on each other. And it's like you can go out there and just stomp on everybody. But oh, well, it's technically it's a bracket two. So I'm only ever going to play it against bracket two decks. But like my brother in Heliod, this is one of the most powerful decks that you own. Come on, dude. Like this is it's by like the intent of what they're trying to do. Like they're trying, if they could definitely set out to build a bracket four deck and they do, but then they take out the one game changer. Well, now it's bracket two. That doesn't make any sense to me. The intent should matter so much more.
I am with you. I think so. Here's the thing for me, when the brackets dropped and before I'd heard the episode with Gavin, with you guys, I went through my decks and a huge, huge majority of the decks are a two technically, but they're built synergistically in a way that like if I get to get like two pieces or three pieces out there, it's game over. Like I'm gonna take the win. The percentage of likelihood to win ends up coming in my favor so hard. Like, and I'm somebody who is staunchly, I don't play tutors. If I play tutors, it's because I have a secret commander thing.
Sure.
Because I built Three Dog and Ariette for the Pride event where you can like technically partner two commanders together, two legends together. And then you've got tutors for like fetch lands, right?
Yeah.
And that's where the few tutors comes in. But I'm not changing any extra spells together. You know, if I pick a deck right now, I'll pick Taysa Opulent Oligarch, a deck that I play a lot and that I really like. It's white and black, no game changers whatsoever, but I'll tell you what, the second I have like four pieces together, I'm locked in. That game is mine unless somebody hits a Farewell Reset or like a Cyclonic Rift. And even if you do hit a Cyclonic Rift, I can still do stuff that'll bring your life total down, bring me back up for some cushioning.
Yep.
I have lots to do.
Yeah, I
built it like a two, but it's not a two.
Yeah, once you get all these cards working together, especially like we have some friends, mutual friends even, like they build these super synergistic piles. And man, if you read the description, so I'm really glad that our friend Rachel Weeks over at Command Zone, she put out a updated graphic that does a little bit better of a job explaining the brackets, which Gavin Verhey very much said, you know, we missed the intent mark a little bit in the announcement. We could have done a better job at that, at making sure people know, like, the intent behind the deck matters a lot. But, like, just because technically it is a bracket two, because you only have one tutor, you have no combos, whatever, but, like, you're sitting there playing the most powerful cards you could be doing outside of the game changers, man, you kind of miss me a little bit with what you're trying to do. And then when you say, like, oh, it's only a bracket two, there's just gamification that it starts happening. And, like, gamer's gonna game. If there's a loophole, they're gonna jump through it. Gamer's gonna game. And so I just wish there was a little bit more emphasis moving forward on what is the intent behind this deck, because that matters so much.
I'll say one thing, speaking of Rachel's updated bracket graphic that she put out, it was fun to see that, like, the conversation become the for 1 through 4, you've got a different level of social focused deck building.
Yep.
But when you hit 4 and 5, that's when you have meta focused deck building.
Yeah.
And I think the biggest change here for me is that 3 has not 1 to 3 game changers, but rather even 0 to 3 game changers.
That was one thing.
Because
players, I think they were scared to say my deck is a bracket 3. It's an upgraded deck. Because they didn't have any game changers.
Right. Yeah. And you don't have to have game changers to be a 3 or a 4. And I think, like, I could prove that. Let's whip out any one of my decks will be a good enough. I'm an engine guy, right? I throw everything together. It's built on synergy, but I'm somebody who I never want to play Cyclonic Rift. The second a card becomes too staple-y, I'm like, well, that's less fun to see over and over again.
Yeah.
So the only decks that I can think of that I'm like, they are definitely a 4 is like my Prosper deck, where I do have a Chrome Mox, you know, where I do have a One Ring, where I do have a Jessica's Will. Like, it's a Prosper deck, for God's sake. It's not meant to be the kid gloves are on or anything. But, you know, if I play my Shield Gengar deck, none of the game changers are on there. But you give me that combo turn, it's game over, you know? What you're talking about with your pet peeve here is the idea of the gamification of bracket 2. The hinge point. Brackets 2-3 is like the...
That is kind of the tipping point for, are you doing something for funsies, or are you starting to kind of get serious about it? And I like that the explanation that Rachel put out there for bracket 3 about how the decks are thoughtfully designed and powered up by synergy and additional card quality.
Yes.
Starting to hint at and imply that you don't need the game changers. If you have intent behind your deck and you're trying to build something that is cohesive, you probably might be a bracket 3 deck.
Yeah. Look, not for nothing. The moment you hit Scryfall and you go and do the advanced search looking for like a keyword or like some terms to match like your commander, and you start plugging like 20 of those cards in. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, buddy. That's synergy.
Yep. Yeah.
You got it.
I mean, I said something on a video recently that got some feedback, but if you are actively building decks and you're trying to win every game with it, you are probably not a bracket 2 deck. Like, you just,
that's solid.
I know that sounds really mean, but like when you look at it, everybody wants to focus on, well, 50% win rate. That's what happens in Magic. No, that's what happens in a 2-player format where it's head to head. There's 4 players. So if you're shooting for a 50% win rate, because that's what you think it should be, like, you are trying, you're not trying to build these bracket 1 and bracket 2 decks.
Right. I'd argue that is the moment that the winning is everything to you. That is the mentality of CDH. And the only thing missing is the meta focus, which is highlighted in Rachel's graphic. And I've had this conversation with Jake Fitzsimons, one of our editors at EDH mm-hmm. Rec and yeah. Commander's Herald. And this was a long time ago. And because I wanted to run this idea by him about an article in defense of casual and but also qualifying CDH in a way that's like, we're not, we are different things, but like it's not even necessarily in the card quality it per se, but rather it's all mentality. It is intent.
Yeah.
And yeah. quite literally, when you are, when you find yourself cutting a card that you're like, this is the fun card that I wanted to build the deck around, but it's just not good enough. You're like, mm-hmm. hey, I'm sorry. You're probably at four now. Like,
you're getting close to, yeah. If you are trying to actively build those super powerful decks, but like, say you want to do it a little bit your way, you want to still leave a little room for seasoning. Bracket three at the lowest. I think. And
truly.
I've had to kind of struggle with this a little bit myself in my own decks too. I had to get pretty honest and like, is this deck actually trying to win? No, this is trying to express something. Like it's probably brackets two, but then at the mm-hmm. same time, I'm glad that people are finally loosening up a little bit in the past couple weeks and since Chicago and really getting to play games with it is we've seen a lot more people going up to bracket three, bracket four, despite the presence of game changers. Like my Jetmir Nexus of Revels deck. That's my Heir Apparent deck.
And
I play a Lurn in there. I have a Purphoros. I have Starlight Spectacular. Like all these cards that just
none of these are game changers.
None of them are game changers.
But
holy crap, it's the most powerful deck that I own.
Yeah.
That thing wrecks.
100%.
So for me, like I was like, okay, like this is a bracket four, so I may as well put like a game changer in there. And so I went and bought a Trouble in Pairs. Well, Trouble in Pairs, first off, I struggle to think Trouble in Pairs is the same thing as an Expropriate. But that's, again, that's waiting game changers. We're not here to do that. But
that's not the stratification.
Yeah, not at all. Not at all. But yeah, so I grabbed a Trouble in Pairs. I'm like, I mean, I like drawing cards and I don't do it very well anyways. So there's some things like that. But man, that deck was a four out the gate with zero game changers.
Easily. And the other thing is like, look, that's the interesting part too, is the idea of, I can be honest with myself that this is a four. That leaves room for being like, well, now I can afford to put in a game changer.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like now that I'm honest with myself, I can play any amount of these that I want to.
Yeah, 100%. That was what I had to do too. I also had the same thing where it gave me like a mental permission to, okay, I'm not doing anything unfair with the people I'm going to be playing games with. Because they have the exact same rules that I'm following here. That's one thing. I think Game Changers has actually been a really fun deck building, kind of like a dial to kind of hone in on a little bit.
Yeah.
It's been super fun for me to get to play around with this, but the negatives, I've seen just some bad faith engagement. But again, like Gavin said, we're tricking you into doing that. Even if you're engaging in bad faith, like, I was at an LGS and somebody mockingly said like, well, it's like, it's a bad bracket three. So I guess it's bracket three. Like, okay, cool. You still told me you're playing a bracket three deck.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think that like, so coming at this from like the, cause what we're focusing in on isn't necessarily like this idea of the game changers or rather the people who can take a step back, look at their deck and go, yeah, no game changers. But this is definitely a four or a three. You know, what we're kind of saying is like the pet peeve stems from the bad faith actors, I guess, right?
The bad faith actors, the gamification of it. So am I the bolus, I guess, to put it bluntly, for thinking that people should consider game changers a little bit less when it comes to their deck building processes?
Yeah, that's an interesting question, man.
I think, and I'm not trying to, because we can have an entire Am I the Bolus episode about what cards should be on the game changer list, what cards shouldn't be. And
we could have that conversation.
Have all sorts of hypotheticals, but as is in the current system, as it exists today, I think people just care way too much about the game changers. And it feels more like they're bracketing cards. They're bracketing the game changers more than they're bracketing their decks themselves. And I really struggle with this whole process.
That's a really good way to put it. Because the other thing is, again, it comes down to the conversation. So like, Morgan and I will get, I have to stop tipping my hand in the conversation so that I can render a verdict later.
Fair.
But what I think is an interesting point here is like we're bracketing the cards rather than the decks.
Mm-hmm.
Huge point. Love that point. But I think it also comes back down to, again, what Gavin said on your podcast, or if we can trick you into having the conversation, that's the biggest win of all.
Yeah.
And I think that having this list of game changers means that I don't have any qualms anymore. Or like, I mean, personally, I never had any qualms with it because you know me, I'm going to talk to somebody about it just directly.
Yeah.
But I'll be like, hey, do you have Risk Study in your deck? I really hate that card. You know what I mean? Or they'll be like, yes, I have it. So, you know, the velocity of people not paying Risk Study is going to get annoying. You're going to kind of run away with the game. Maybe I need to play something that can match that speed. Or I'm just learning like, hey, this is what I have to get ready for. Like, mm-hmm. even if I've resolved to play my two, I can play against a four. I don't care. I'm going to see if I can hang or if I can enjoy that game anyway.
Sure, yeah.
Because that's still up to me. But there are definitely some game changer cards that if somebody sat down and they were like, look, I have a Demonic Tutor deck, but this is my Ooze Kindred deck in Golgari, mm-hmm. That I have this partner pairing just for the colors so I can run the tutor and
sure, yeah.
get Death's Presence and a Rayhan. And you're like, yeah, okay, whatever. Like, I'm not going to get mad at a tutor in that deck when it's so hyper-specific and
yeah,
I
really struggle to say no to situations like that. Like, again, like the little Timmy or when I was right. in my old playgroup, we used to call them baby seals because they're just like, they're so cute and like, oh, you're just trying so hard. So if like I saw this baby seal and they opened up a vampiric tutor and they put it in uh-huh. their deck and it's just like a complete pile of nonsense.
Yeah.
Of course, kid, just play your deck, man. We don't care.
What did you go vampiric tutor for? Oh, you got an Aki Lava Runner? Okay, dude. Sure. Why not?
Yeah.
What is that card?
I guess.
I've never seen that played before.
Yeah.
One of those flip into a legendary card? Okay, cool. Sure. Have fun, man.
Yeah.
Like, I can't get mad at that. I will say that, like, there are definitely some cards that get my shoulders up. But, like, at the end of the day, we're playing a game, and this list basically tells people be forthcoming about mm-hmm. these cards in your deck.
Yep.
Like, I've never had to sit down with my ever-changing Dane deck and go, by the way, I run Grand Arbiter the Fourth in here, mainly because it's a slow deck that has all six to like five to seven drops.
Yep.
And this is going to make them castable in this deck that is really slow, and it'll slow you guys down a little bit. But it's literally, that's the point. And I run one game changer and people are like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to kill your Grand Arbiter. Fair. Totally fair. You know what I mean?
At least not my commander.
That's awesome. Exactly. And then, so I think that I did a conversation with Roman, one of our new writers at Commander's Herald.
Mm-hmm.
He does a big, I think it's called his, forgive me, Roman. I think it's the Beginner's Guide to Commander.
Sure.
And we did a conversation about the Veilyard deck from the Doctor Who set, the Grixis legend who says that you get an additional vote in voting. So whenever a card asks you to vote, and then your opponents have to face a villainous choice again when they're faced with a villainous choice. So basically, when you have an expropriate in that deck, you're going to get to vote four times. Like, you vote once for yourself, you vote twice for yourself, and then your opponents, so five times. So essentially, you're guaranteeing two extra turns minimum, and that's just off of one expropriate. And so he's like, yeah, I mean, I tell people about it, but then they're like, ah, whatever, your commander, I've never seen this commander before, no big deal. But then after a couple of games in Chicago and after a couple of games with his friends, I watched him unsleeve expropriate and put in another land because it just was not worth it at the power level that he wanted to be playing. So mm-hmm. while expropriate is perfect thematically for the deck, we were discussing brackets and he said, you know what? This does lead to feel bads. This is in the area that I want to be, like 2 to a 3. This deck is more theme than function. Expropriate kind of takes that away. You know, there's a lot of other cool stuff I want to do with the deck that isn't just playing a 9-mana spell and watching the light from everybody's eyes just fade from the fun.
Yeah.
So shout out to Roman for,
I mean, shout out to Morgan, too. Shout out to Morgan. Morgan's finding all these people to write for us. Shout out to Morgan.
Yeah, that's right. Shout out to Morgan for finding Roman, but also to Roman for being conscious of that and then also recognizing that, like, this was a definite a hinge point, like, you know,
mm-hmm.
him noticing that and deciding I would rather lean towards a 3 than to lean towards a 4, or I would rather lean towards a 2. So he removed his game changers, mm-hmm. right?
I did that with several decks.
Oh, same.
Yeah. I had a few decks that I was like, I want this to be a 2. I built this with the intent to be what bracket 2, or I had one deck that this is what a bracket 1 was meant to be. And so I took out some game changers and went back to business as usual with the deck. And it's still right. Like, the game changers weren't making that deck better. I mean, well, granted, yes, mm-hmm. they were making it better, but not in the way that I wanted it to be. And so I optimized it for my own play preference. And so that's exactly. another thing I think too, is I'm saying, you said a really good thing. Am I playing for theme or function? And in these decks where mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I'm definitely playing for theme here. Like my Sam, the Frodo deck, the partner deck, the precon.
Yes. The partner deck. Yeah.
I made a majority of the cards that I changed around there. I was like, this is for theme. Like, I'm putting in like totally. Anything that revolves around Samwise Gamgee, the character. And so it's cards like Hell Sam's yeah. Desperate Rescue, Valorous Stance, because the flavor text on the Fallout one is just perfect. We did a video about it, and I said, like, this is a bracket one deck. This is only trying to play cards that relate to the character Samwise Gamgee. And somebody looked at it like, oh, yes, but it still functions properly, though. Seems to me like you're not actually prioritizing theme. Like, okay, hold up. Cut the crap. Like, I'm playing every version of Sam in there, and, like, they don't, like, they kind of do something similar, but they don't, there's no explicit synergy. I'm playing a bunch of Lord of the Rings cards into a bunch of bad cards, too. And exactly. like, yes, I had to put some cards to make sure it just actually functions properly, but somebody called me out and they're like, oh, you're playing a heroic convention. I'm like, okay, well, that came in the precon, dude. So I don't know what yeah, you're
that's
you're,
in there.
Yeah. That was in there to start. And so,
yeah,
I struggle a lot with people saying like, ah, but you do draw cards, your deck functions, it's at least a 3. And I don't buy that at all.
No. See, I agree with you on that one. Like, just because I have a Jeskha's Will in the Faldorn precon, you know what I mean, doesn't make yeah. that a 3 or 4. And I think that, like, look, speaking as somebody, big Jeskha's Will fan, all right?
Big Jeskha's Will fan, yeah.
Bought a ton of them when Commander's Legends. Yeah, Commander Legends dropped, and I was like, this is $4, not for long. I bought up a bunch of them. I got a lot of red decks, baby. But do you know how many are sitting in my binder right now because I took them out of decks because I'd rather power down than power up.
Yeah, same.
It's just the way to be.
And that doesn't mean that, like, we're trying to power down to gamify it again. It's like, again, what was my intent when I was building this deck? And there's just so many people that, like, they make the bad faith arguments about, well, I mean, your pre-DH deck, it does have a Force of Will. It obviously can't be that bad. I'm like, dude, I don't play any cards since 2011. I don't know what you're talking about. Like, this deck does not keep up.
Nah. You know what else is fun is this list made it easy to spot cuts in decks.
Yeah.
Because all my decks, dude, are like bursting at the seams. Look at this, right? You'll see this divider right here. Okay. You got the deck here and then this divider. All that's like 20 cards that I'm like, maybe this should go in. No, maybe this should go in. And I've got like a working sideboard or whatever. But the moment this game changer list happened, I was like, okay, let's see what decks means that I got an extra slot. And now I get to pick a card that I've been wanting to try. Yeah. And that's an extra point that I thought was fun, which I would encourage you all listening. If you've got decks that you're kind of like, I'd rather have it in this direction, go through the game changer list and take out whatever is on there and enjoy.
I mean, right in front of me, I've got a Smothering Tithe just sitting there that I just took out of a deck. Because my Council of Four deck, I'm like, I would rather play this against the baby seals out there than play against bracket 4.
Yes.
And that was the only game changer in the deck. So I took it out and it's bracket 2.
Yeah.
And easy peasy, ready to go.
Easy peasy. Yeah. You replace that with Knowledge is Power from Murders at Karlov Manor.
I thought about it. Actually, I have a copy of that, but like, it's also that's funny a really too. Good one. Like it was so Dana, my co-host over on the EDH Rec podcast, he had, he had Ancient Tomb in literally every deck.
And every deck.
Every deck. And so when we got to record that episode with Gavin, we knew what the list was going to be because we were helping them develop it and release it for Architect.
Uh-huh.
And we recorded the episode before the bracket announcement was done so that we could have the episode come out a couple days after. And so we were talking to Gavin about it and like, okay, well, like if we're going to do this, Dana's like, I want my decks to start at brackets too. So I took out all of my ancient tombs. And he holds up a stack that's like 4 inches tall of ancient tombs. It was so funny.
Yeah.
And Gavin told that story on the release stream too. He's like, you know, somebody that I was talking to showed me a pile of ancient tombs that they took out of the decks.
Uh-huh.
And so like, it was super funny to see just Dana get thrown under that. Well, you're not really thrown under the bus, but get outed.
I mean,
in that way.
Well, I'll say this, because I mean, I think this will be a fun button, is that this is no exaggeration. Picture your fingers like just a couple inches apart. Like that stack of ancient tombs, when I was in Chicago and we were talking about the brackets and stuff, Dana was telling us about how he took out ancient tombs. And separately, I spoke to all three of you and the ancient tombs did come up.
Oh my
gosh.
And
all three of you did about the same size of stack. And that's how you know it's real. Not even like divorced from each other. It's not like a fishing story where it keeps getting bigger.
No, it's man. No,
it was literally that size, and you're like, how the hell? That's a lot of ancient tombs.
I mean, Dana's infinity years old, so I mean, he was buying ancient tombs for like $2.
Well, his episode was the first of the podcast, and his Am I the Bullcast story was about how hey, I have all these dual lands and decks. Sorry, Ken, I have all these ABUR duels and I just put them in my whatever decks and people see them and they automatically target me. That's my pet peeve.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, I mean, if you've been playing a long time, you just kind of have those, don't you?
Yeah. I just kind of have those. And somebody was trying to tell me that my Ukima and Khazar deck, which I took out all the game changers, the deck is, it can do cool things, but that's kind of the point of Commander and Magic in general. But it's, oh my gosh. I used to play Alurin in Legacy, which was Sultai colors. So I have my Bayou, I have my Underground Sea, I have my Trops, and I just put them in the deck because like I have the colors and like I guess I may as well. Mm-hmm. And it's functional, but it's like I'm still playing I'm playing a lot of pet cards. Sorry, Ken, caught myself there. It kind of lives up to Rachel's expanded version of like winds are telegraphed and or incremental. Like, you see what I'm doing. Everything is on board with that deck. I'm not doing some tricky things on the stack or anything. What you see is what you get with a majority of my decks, really, but Ukima and Khazar 100%, because like it's just a critical mass of +1/+1 counters, and eventually I attack you. Like, that's just what the deck does. So I took out the game changers, and it's a bracket to 2 deck, but somebody's like, well, you have duels in there. It can't be bracket 2. Like, the duels, they also said ABU duels should be game changers, which I almost laughed like on my keyboard at them, but neither here nor there.
Silly. Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, I like the line of winds are telegraphed or incremental, because if we put that strategy on all the Aristocrats decks I have, technically absolutely true, but the amount of it happening definitely puts it at a 3 at the very least. You know what I mean? And that's why this bracket system, it's important to allow yourself to have the conversation. And then, like, we'll wrap up here because it's just, I want to talk to Morgan about whether or not your point is bolus-worthy. But I'll say, I think that the most important piece about all this is have the conversation, do it for real. You know,
have the conversation come with yourself first.
Some honesty. Yes, thank you. Exactly. Yes. Do it with some honesty.
Yeah, be honest with yourself first about what you're even trying to do with the deck before you go to your LGS and play with your friends. Because if you can't be honest with yourself, then you're never going to have an honest conversation with other people.
Yeah, and then what are you really doing? What do you get out of this?
I mean, that just means, like, if you really need those wins, I mean, I tell it to somebody who, like, I don't cut my friends' decks. I don't cut anybody's decks in Commander. Like, and I always tell them, if you need this win, you need it more than I do if you have to cheat in order to get there.
Exactly.
So like,
I do the same thing at a pre-release. You know, we all get a pack a game at my LGS, right?
Yeah.
If you look, you can cut my deck all you want. I'll just tap the top of it. If you cheat and you really need, like, this is the place
good
to do
for
it.
You.
As far as I'm concerned, like, cheat. I don't care. I'm here to see how these cards work out of the box. You know,
I will, if I'm presented a deck and somebody like insists that I cut their deck, I'll do what I did. Uh-huh. I did it on day two of a GP and got a judge called on me. Is I'll swap the top two cards. So the top card will be the second card, and then like it doesn't uh-huh. matter. And
it doesn't do anything.
I did that at a GP like almost 10 years ago at this point. Jesus, that makes me feel old. And they're like, you can't do that. They're like, what? Yeah, I can. No. They're like, no, you have to shuffle my deck. I was like, no, I actually don't. So they called a judge on me. The judge comes over and he's like, he only cut like the top two cards and just swapped them around. And the judge was like, okay. And like, what's your point, dude?
Nice.
And it was super funny. And like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah. That's kind of funny. I like that one. I'll say I'll tap the top. If you insist on a cut, I'll give you a proper cut down the middle. If we're being silly about it, I'll give you four piles and then tell you which one to pick. And then you put them on top again. It's a game. Let's make it fun. You know,
yeah.
If the fun for you is being super spiky, hey, that's your fun. You know, I'm not here to yuck your yum. I'm not here to give you a hard time. Just afford me the same courtesy. Afford me and mm-hmm. the other two people in our pod the same courtesy.
Yeah, I mean, just
Matt Morgan.
Be happy with each other, man.
Exactly. Matt Morgan, you sweet, sweet prince. Let everybody know where they can find you.
Mikey, so you can find me on pretty much any social media platform, except for Twitter. That place is dead to me. At Mathemus55, that's MathImus55. Blue Sky, do that thing. Instagram, whatever. It's the same everywhere, because I like that built-in accountability, so I'm not spouting off and shooting at the hip. you know it's me, and there's going to be no imposters.
Hell yeah. And of course, be sure to check out the EDH Rec cast anywhere you get your podcast, but also especially on YouTube. There's a lot of fun elements of the video. A lot of work goes into it. So check it out on YouTube. I think it's time for us to head on over and speak to Morgan on the other side. All right, Morgan, here we come. It's always nice to have Matt Morgan chat with me, my pal. Thanks for calling in, Matt. Long time coming, considering literally getting the show going required Matt. Matt's been around since the beginning of the Bowlcast. Matt's been helping us set up so many things. And we just kind of were sitting down like, we never got you on. He's like, yeah, I didn't realize it. And so there we go. Now we've got all the EDH Reccast boys on. Matt Morgan, thank you for calling in. Thank you for taking the time to chat about the brackets and our recent experience out in Chicago. So thrilled to have you and very excited to deliberate on whether or not you're the Bolas, which I think might be an easier one this week, let's just say. Morgan, what do you got for us today? What do you think?
So Matt Morgan of the EDH Rec cast, the official third guy of the EDH Rec cast, trademarked the one and only, my homie in the OG. Let's talk about the voting system first, right? Really easy, really simple. All right, let's go.
Easy,
so, Mike, your vote counts for three.
Right.
And my vote counts for one. I hope that wasn't too fast. I hope everybody got that.
Speedy, got that on the back end. Explanation.
Super quick. Matt Morgan wants to know.
What's he want to know?
He wants to know, and he's got a pet peeve. He wants to know, am I the bolus? For my pet peeve being that there are some bad faith bracketers out there, my friends. So this new bracket system,
yes,
all right, gives people the opportunity to be a little ornery about the way that things are and the way that things go.
A little sneaky sneaks.
So I have no game changers, but my deck is a two. But I have an insufferable combo, or I went on turn three consistently. So it's actually a four.
This is, so we moved up this conversation from others because of how timely this was. Because we don't know when the bracket system is going to get any changes. We don't know when we're expecting maybe additions or subtractions from the
It
game
should be,
list.
If I remember right, next month, the end of next month, April 26th, I think is the ish date based on Gavin's article.
Exactly, which is why if we had waited the proper amount of time to release this, this would have come out in like July and we wouldn't have this conversation make sense. So we move this up. Next time you hear from us, Commander Mechanic's going to be joining us. just shout out. We already recorded that one. It's very good and very excited for you. But we have to bump this one up because timeliness on the subject matter. And I'll say this, the bad faith bracketeering. Ooh, yep. Buddy. Ooh, buddy.
Stop it.
So here's
just
the thing.
Just stop it.
I unknowingly participated in bad faith bracketeering because I didn't quite understand the brackets at first. This was in the first 2 days of brackets, right? Mm-hmm. Didn't quite get what it was meant to be. I was like, well, I have no game changers. I don't chain together extra turn spells. The only tutors I have are fetch lands. So therefore, this comes together as a two based on the criteria. And so I guess most of my decks, if not all of my decks, are twos. Okay, great.
Until...
oh, I have this one deck that has a game changer, singular game changer. That's a three. You know, that kind of thing. However, if you sit down and play against one of my decks, automatically three. No doubt about it. I'm going synergy heavy. I'm going intentionality. I'm building cool things, but they're engines that require many pieces. But once they hum. You know what I mean? But just looking face value at the brackets and the description, I go, that's a two. Now, taking some time with it, speaking to some people, having experienced the cleaned up version with Rachel's points, you know, meta focus or social focus building, you know, so that kind of thing, that whole deal with Matt's discussion with the other EDH Rec Cast boys and Gavin, kind of just highlighting that this is less about the game changers list and yes, more about where you sit with your intentions of it. That made me realize I'm definitely pretty firmly in a minimum of a three on most of these decks, right? So to me, bad faith bracketeering can happen, but only after this point, right? Because if you don't understand the system and you're talking to people and they clear it up with you, they tell you what it is, you sit down with your decks and you go through them again and you go, okay, realistically speaking, these are not twos. These are threes or fours. That's fine. You're not like in bad faith. You just didn't know. However, it's the folks who intentionally take out game changers, but continue to put in Kiki Jiki Zealous Conscripts combo or, you know, combos that, let's just say, what make it a little too easy to do well, or like a deck full of counter spells is probably not going to be a two. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So that's kind of the pet peeve here, is those people who want to game the system to be, I am technically a two, but yeah, I can hang with a couple fours. The CDH deck might not have any game changers or fast mana like that. You know what I mean?
I think the idea here is that context matters, right? Like I love the brat. We said, I think in the last show, that the idea of the brackets is to further simplify a complex conversation that you already have with people. This is not some new, crazy, scary thing that you're not already talking about, hopefully, every time you sit down at a pod with strangers. I play EDH almost exclusively with strangers, and so we're having this conversation all the time, whether it's attached to brackets or, you know, yeah, my deck kind of like just pops off like a lot, right? And I look at it as, what can my deck do? Like for me personally, what can my deck do when I'm mana screwed? What can it do when I'm missing a piece versus multiple pieces? How many times am I kind of stonewalled in combat? I've got like 40 creatures, but I can't get through to anybody, right? Because, you know, I'm either missing somebody or, you know, everybody just has too many other resources. So that all kind of fits, I think, partially into the bracket system as well as what can your deck do when it's like not as optimized just because of general variance in gameplay. So when it comes to Matt's point, if you're one of those bad faith people who is just trying to game the system, you are the bolus, dude. You are the biggest, baddest, bitchingest bolus of all time because you are not being helpful. You are being screwy with intention. You're trying to upset people. You have some weird ego inflation thing where like your magic deck is who you are and all of this. And it's a mess and it's nonsense and nobody likes you. I'm sorry. I know that sounds like really harsh and judgmental, but dude, it's true. Stop doing
it. It's both. It is harsh and judgmental, but for a reason. I'll say to these kind of people, the game begins not when the cards are drawn or anything, but rather when they sit down and begin to have this conversation.
I'm smarter than
the
you.
The game begins with their deck building and going, ah, many people will see this as a two because of the restrictions and what they point out. And they would be correct. But when I get my hands on it, or, you know, because of all of these not being game changers, I now have the win so easily set up. It's just kind of like, I mean, is this really what you want? Do you really want to, like, I don't know. It's kind of like, if I'm somebody who can do karate, right, and I show up at a karate tournament and I sign up, and it's like I'm signing up for literally, technically speaking, when I signed up, I signed up for a lightweight class. And then I go ahead and I go home and I just, right before the actual, look, I don't know sports well enough to finish this, but like, you get what I'm saying. If I sign up as a lightweight and I show up as a heavyweight competing in the lightweights, like, that's par for the course in boxing or whatever, but this isn't boxing. Like, I don't think, what do you gain from being the strongest of the week? You know, like, what do you gain from, you know, somebody being like, hey, over here, we play with our one hand, and then you show up and you go, actually, I have only one hand, but then you, on your thumb and your pinky, you've grown two extra hands, and that's still one hand to you. You know what I mean? It doesn't make sense to me that this is where you would want to showcase yourself. It doesn't feel like you're looking for a challenge, but rather you're looking for the comfort of a win, in which case, go play a game alone. Like, go do something else. I don't get pub stomping. I don't get this idea of, like, because that's really the only reason you need this. If you're bracketing in bad faith, the only reason is 100% because you're looking to pub stomp. No doubt about it.
It's just no other way around it. People want something to say. And I mean, I think it goes into the whole culture of comment creators. People just want to be able to well actually everything.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I just want to point out all the things wrong with this and offer you no constructive ideas about it, because that's fun for everyone, isn't it? It's so fun when I can tell you that I'm smarter than you because you didn't notice this, or you don't care about it and you should. Why? I don't know. I'm smarter than you. It's literally how these conversations go with these kinds of people, I think. They say the bracket system sucks. Everything's a 2.5. Everything's a 7. Those kind of people. I don't care. I really don't.
I don't want it.
I don't want it either. Yeah, because it's like, what are you talking about? Like, literally, what about? Let's break it down. What are you talking about? Okay, everything's a 7. Tell me why.
I think it's a pretty easy vote for me. Morgan, are you locked in on a vote?
100%.
Do you want to count down to it and just say it together?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, 3, 2, 1. Not the ball
sink.
Is. Oh, damn.
Shoot. Wrong count. Darn it. I was going all the way back. I was going all the way back.
All the way back to when we synchronized our microphones? No.
We said the same thing. See, I'm trained, but it's like a response kind. There, right? Like a reflex.
Okay. So we're both on board. Matt Morgan, you're the Trugan. This is an episode where you get we're bringing up Ugin. No spoilies, but spoilies. Man, if you haven't read the Tarkir story yet, please get on it. It is so good. The Tarkir. Whoo! Before we jump into Tarkir, I want to bring up one more Final Fantasy person. Because we got one more. Celeste Rune Knight. When Celeste enters, discard any number of cards, then draw that many cards plus one on a 4/4/4. Yes, please. One in a Mardu for a 4/4 that enters and Valakut Awakenings you. Awesome. And then whenever one or more other creatures you control enter, if one or more of them was cast from the graveyard or entered from a graveyard, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. You lost me. Here's the thing. If this was a creature that just did that first part, I'd be like, hot damn, that is a good card. But this whole element of, like, now every time I reanimate something, which is exactly what I'm going to be doing the whole time, I have to Cathar's Crusade my board. Like, oh, come on, man. I don't want to be doing that. Oh, come on. I don't want that. Not for me. But it's so fun otherwise. I really like this card.
I'm really excited for Final Fantasy in general.
Of course you are.
I it's it, I mean, the whole Universe is Beyond thing, like, talk about the ones that are coming out. I mean, and Dragonstorm comes out first, so we're all over the place when it comes to things being revealed. Okay, we got Dragonstorm revealed, and spoilers happening SpongeBob. Right now. Or, well, by the time that you...
By the time this is out, it's probably started.
They will have started, like, yes, on Tuesday.
Which
March
is when this comes out.
18th. So...
Oh, never mind. This comes out on the 25th.
Yes, so you will have already seen, probably I have already done. Seen, because I'm from the future... What is coming out on Tuesday? And I can say, as somebody who played Magic and was running an LGS during the original Khanz Tarkir block in 2015, 1,000 years ago, a different age.
I'm dying.
I'm my knees
dying
and my
of old
back.
Age.
All of it. I may already be dead. I'm not entirely sure. I do live in America, but
R.I.P.
it
Morgan
looks fantastic.
Sanchez.
I mean, this set, really just fantastic throwbacks. I haven't read the story yet, but I trust everyone when they say that it's amazing. I'll admit I haven't read a Magic story in a hot minute because it seems like they're a hot mess. But if somebody tells me to do it, I'm going to do it. So trust that I will.
That's real good.
But right after Dragonstorm, we have Final Fantasy, which comes out in June. That's going to be crazy for me. I will have no money. I will be offering my kidney for sale to anybody who's interested in order to get a piece of that set. And interestingly enough, along with Dragonstorm, Final Fantasy will be standard legal. That's something fun to remember. That will be in print for a hot minute and be in standard.
Fun to remember is a... depends on who you ask.
Yes. And so the other fun thing is that, what is it? The set after that will be Spider-Man, I believe, right? September.
I believe so.
Is when Spider-Man comes out. So that's another, what I imagine to be a back-to-back UB set, unless Edge of Eternities is in there somewhere, which is another set that we have kind of spoilers for.
Which
nobody knows what's going on
anymore. We've seen art for that, which I'm
excited
about.
We've seen art spoilers, yes. Edge of Eternities
looks
great.
I'm a big fan of the space set coming, for sure. But we do have a little bit of Tarkir to discuss, because we haven't talked about this yet.
Yes, that's next on the list, yeah. There's too much, girl. we got a lot.
Yeah, exactly. There's way too much. The Tarkir story is really good. I recommend you all check it out. The Tarkir spoilers so far, the cards that have been previewed so far, we've got a new Mox. We've got a new Mox that only taps for mana if you control a dragon, which, I mean, you know, you've got that one mana... Universal Automaton, like the one generic mana changeling, and you've got the black changeling too. I'm not gonna look it up, but there's a one mana black changeling that can't block or be blocked that is available to you for one mana, and then your Mox Jasper will tap for mana because it's technically a dragon. I don't see myself looking at this card seriously. At least not from any decks or any decks really. Even it's one of those cards that if I open it, it looks like maybe Standard will find something to do with it and I will pop it on cardsphere.com. But otherwise, some of the spoilers that are out and exciting for me are, I think that the Siege cycle promises to be really cool. So we've only got one, and it's Baron's Step Siege, 2WB for an enchantment. When this enters, you choose Abzan or Mardu, which are the two clans that these two colors belong to in this set, or on Tarkir rather, which I think is the perfect way to do the sieges for multicolor. Such a brilliant way to do this. Excellent way to handle this design. Thrilled about it. Excited for the rest of them, even though this is already my favorite one. If we're being real, the Orzhov one belonging to Abzan and Mardu, that's where my heart lives. I'm so into this. When this enters, for Abzan, at the beginning of your end step, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. Sure. Or the better one, Mardu, at the beginning of your end step, if a creature died under your control this turn, each opponent sacrifices a creature of their choice. That's honestly an edict effect that is kind of like, yeah, okay, Grave Pact-y, but it's not for every creature. It happens at the end step. Just one creature dies on your end step, they have to edict. It's a way more fair effect that comes with the backup of, hey, I can start building this board and building up and putting all these counters down. It's got that modality to it that's quite nice. I think it'll fit nicely in a bunch of decks. I quite like Baron's Step Siege, and I think that this design, being indicative of more to come, makes me very excited for the set. This is what I keep coming back to, personally. Another card that caught my eye was Smile at Death. which is another, it's a mono white card in the Mardu clan because it depicts Alesha. It's 3 white for an enchantment at the beginning of your upkeep. Return up to 2 target creature cards with power 2 or less from your graveyard to the battlefield and put a +1/+1 counter on each of those creatures.
Golly,
pretty
gee.
Sick. You start your turn off with a pretty sweet deal. There are lots of creatures that have amazing enters of battlefield effects when they don't have power, you know, 3 or greater. You know, we're looking at 2 or less. Lots of great ETBs. Also, just lots of great utility creatures that get better with the +1/+1 counter, like something like Esper Sentinel right off the bat. You've got Hopeful Initiate that loves the counters that it gets for the ability to remove counters and then destroy an artifact or enchantment. And then you've got Scholar of Lost Horizons, which gets another counter to remove off itself to go get you another land. It's a pretty cool card. It makes me want to revisit the idea of making a deck for each color that the Ninth Doctor can support. So I've got my Grixis upkeeps. Then I could put together Jeskai upkeeps. And then, of course, I'll put together Temur upkeeps just to have all 3. But Smile at Death is already just like, oh, okay. Well, this one could easily...
It's Synergy City, girl. Synergy yeah. City for Smiles at Death.
I quite like it. It's a sweet mythic.
I have an important question to ask you.
Hit me with it.
Because I know we can talk about the cards and like all that stuff is really great and blah, blah, blah. Uh-huh. But
what do you think?
Which clan are you in? Whoa. What's the official clan that Mike Garoza is a part of from the Khans of Tarkir era?
I'm pretty solidly in Mardu. Like in terms of the decks I like to play, they tend to be black focused or black centered. So we're looking at Rakdos or Orzhov. Those are my 2 favorite color pairs. You know, I do love me some Dimir. So we're looking at, you know, it's either Mardu or probably Abzan's fine. I'd like green a lot less, but I think Sultai, the way Sultai uses green is more interesting to me than Abzan. So for my rankings personally, I'm going Mardu at the top, Sultai second, Abzan, Jeskai, and then Temur can f*** right off. Sorry, Ken. I don't care about Temur. I just don't have it.
It's a clan that should have been stronger in standard and wasn't and was really disappointing, I think.
Yeah.
Temur's cool in theory, I think is the idea, but not in practice.
Temur's kind of like Temur's kind of like the chaos of old is what we love, you know? And I'm just kind of like, whatever. I don't care. I don't care about Temur. I just don't. Anything in Temur that's caught my attention in a long time. And even then, it hasn't stuck around. Jeskai's a little bit different because I've got that Jeskai Legends deck that I quite like. And I think Narset is really well designed. But it's also like, it's a hard balance to strike because you want to care about spells, but you also want to care about creature tokens or not, but also non-creature spells specifically. I don't know.
I'd have to say I'm firmly an Abzan girly just because my boo and Offense of the Foremost. I still want to make like just like so a really good. Lame commander deck with her. And also
we'll
played
I would
played
hate
Siege Rhino in standard.
Yeah, buddy.
And the fact that we got Skirmish Rhino girl and uncommon.
I know.
Ah,
uncommon
the boomer
Siege Rhino,
magic in
me
is
I mean
just
that's
too
what
much.
I want. That's what I love. So that's what I'm expecting
downships?
Out of this set is like a bit not necessarily the downships, but more like the references to old, like to having more references to cons, but also an updated feel to it. So like Skirmish Rhino, knock 1 mana off of it, and you've still got this incredible tank, like a trample 3/4 that enters and drains each opponent for 2. Like you gain 2 life and each opponent loses 2. It's Siege Rhino for modern times, I guess, you know?
Yes.
Because Siege Rhino was a 4/5 trample that did the same but for 3 life and it was a 4 mana. Skirmish Rhino lopping off that 1 generic mana going down to uncommon, pretty brutal, but at the same time give me as many of those as I can handle in my pre-release kit. That said, I think that the commander stuff is pretty interesting too for Abzan. I don't know if you saw the face commander for the Abzan deck, because I think Commander at Home played it at Chicago, and that's where we saw the spoiler. Beator Ancestor's voice. 2 and an absent for a 3/5 flying life-linking spirit dragon. At the beginning of your end step, put a number of +1/+1 counters on up to one other target creature you control, equal to the amount of life you gain this turn. Already pretty sick. But also in the same line of text, it continues, it says, return up to one target creature with mana value less than or equal to the amount of life you lost this turn from your graveyard to the battlefield. This deck wants you to lose life and gain life in the same turn.
Perfect.
That is such a fun thing to build around and to conceptualize. I've been having fun. I'm on Architect tinkering with a list right now, trying to figure it out. Set to private. Don't go looking for it yet. I'm not done with it. But I'm having a lot of fun finding stuff like, you know, Children of Corliss, stuff like that, Tainted Sigil, the regular like life pay and life gain things, but trying to find more ways to do it and keep it interesting without necessarily needing to lean on Bolas's Citadel. But that said, really cool card, very interesting card. You've also got the Sultai one, like Teval, the balanced scale, 1 and a Sultai for a 4/4 Spirit Dragon with flying. When Teval attacks, mill 3 cards, then you may return a land from your graveyard to the battlefield tapped. Doesn't need to be a land that was milled there this turn. Just any land in your graveyard. You can loop that wasteland all you want. Then whenever one or more cards leave your graveyard, any kind of card, you create a 2/2 black zombie druid creature token. A druid. Druid. Does that make you feel a certain way?
We're green, druid? Girl. We're green.
Well, thing is, if you know me, you know that the only thing in green that I've wanted to do for a very long time is achieve the Giltleaf Archdruid win con of taking everybody's lands. So Giltleaf Archdruid is a 3/3 elf druid for 3 green-green from original Warwind that says whenever you play a druid spell, you may draw a card. Sure. But tap 7 untapped druids you control. Gain control of all lands target player controls. I'm sorry, but that's got to be like an achievement unlock kind of thing. Not to mention, Seton Crozen Protector is a legend that I bought like 8 of because not only do I like the look of this thing, but I always thought maybe one day this will pop off. It's a green, green, green for a 2/2 centaur druid. Tap an untapped druid you control. Add green to your mana pool. So this can tap for green, essentially. But if you're making a ton of druids off of stuff leaving your graveyard, you've got more mana dorks that don't even need to have haste because it's Seton or Seton tapping them with the ability. Either way, I think it's pretty sick. I think it's interesting, but also not something that I'm like super eager to like jump on. Right. So, but it is something that I'm like, one day I'll get it done. And I have my Giltleaf Archdruid from Morningtide, not Lauren, from Morningtide. And I'm ready. I'm ready for it. I'm so ready for it. Anyway, Morgan, we've been on for a little while, huh? We've been talking.
There's too many sets coming out. I don't know what's coming out when, who's what, but I mean, it's exciting, especially when we're returning to somewhere play. Like Tarkir. Yeah. Just give me the cards. We got 5 precons coming out, one for every clan. So be sure to check out our upgrade guides and our pre-con reviews once those release. Yeah. That should probably be about a week before area, release.
Totally. If you're in the Montreal area, I am going to be buying all 5 of these. Oh, I will not be touching them. I will not be upgrading them for the first little while. And so if you're like, hey, I got some pals and I've got some pals and we could get ourselves a pod to play with all 5 or just 4 of the precons, and you guys don't mind meeting me at my LGS, I'd love to play these things with you guys. So shout out, get a hold of me online.
Bracket 2s.
And this is probably the bracket 2s.
Solid precons. 2s. Yes.
Solid. So you can get a hold of me at Mike Carrozza, MikeCarrozza on Instagram and Blue Sky. Technically, I'm still on Twitter, but it does not matter. Don't bother with me there. I'm barely touching it anymore. Then, of course, you can reach us at AmITheBullCast on Blue Sky as well. Morgan, where can people find you?
Yep, I'm on Blue Sky, also at Indigo Gentleman, and on Twitter, not as much, but I'm trying to get less social media in my diet if I possibly can. But feel free to always reach out if you want to write, if you want to chat, if you want to whine about something, I'm here for it.
And there you have it. How's that feel? Do you feel like we could scoot the day on that one?
It's feeling a little scooty. Yeah.
Okay. I guess it's time to scoot the day. Thanks for checking out the newest Bowlcast. We'll be back in a couple of weeks with Commander Mechanic. We love you very much. Happy Tarkir time, everybody. Bye-bye.